Welcome to the final section, part three, of our interview with Art and Doreen Petrick of St. Joseph Vineyards in Madison, Ohio.
I want to go back to something we talked about again when I first came in, was the idea of education. And it seems that, again, from my point of view, people are asking better questions, people are learning and wanting to learn. They don't want to look ignorant. They want to be able to understand what they're drinking. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Well, I think I work in the tasting room quite a bit. People come in, and a lot of times, majority of the time, they want to know if we grow the grapes. So what we do here in the tasting room, which is different than a lot of tasting rooms, everybody that works behind the tasting bar has worked in the field. They've been through the whole process. So you get more of a personalized tasting. We don't just set you up with a tasting tray. We have nice glasses for the red, and we go through each wine, or we ask, what do you usually like? And as far as people, you know, people sometimes say, well, you know, I don't know anything about wine. I don't think we intimidate people here. It's, well, what do you like? Let's go with that. You've never had a dry red? Well, why don't you try, you know, our Pinot Noir? Pinot Noir is a good red to start with because it's not real tannicky. It's not real strong. It's just nice. And especially on the younger varietal, you get a lot of the black cherry fruit. So what we do here is we try to help people, any questions that they have, we answer. And most everybody here, I won't say most, but everybody here has done everything. I mean, Christina works in the vineyard. She helps with the harvest. She's pruned. She's tied. Everything that we've done, you know, they've done. And now even our son is behind the tasting. And it's really kind of nice because, you know, people ask him questions and he can answer them because he works out there and he knows what goes into the bottle. So
I had a chuckle, Ray, because I remember a conversation with some of the folks, and they were asked, how come your Pinot Noir costs more than your Riesling? And by God, they were able to explain it. Well, did you know that we have to go out and leaf pluck twice a year and take the leaves away from that fruit so that it gets the sun, so it develops the flavor? Did you know that we throw half of it on the ground because we want to make sure that one cluster gets enough energy from that vine to ripen? So if it costs a little bit more, there's a good reason for it. And by the way, did you notice it also tastes pretty damn good?
It's a funny thing that's hard to always get across to people, that the idea of the cost behind a bottle, whether it be $9.95 or $99.95, is there's an element of labor, time, thought. You know, I remember once having a conversation with somebody about the idea of, if you start your vineyard tomorrow, it's the only business I know of, you're going to wait, what, 6-7 years till you're actually going to be able to sell something. Right. I don't think most people can afford to keep pouring money into a machine like that.
You're absolutely right, yeah, but there are some that are planning it that way. Let's hope that they've got enough money to last those 7 years, but yeah, you really can't start, and we never did, start out with a business model or a business plan that has at it how much you're going to charge for a wine, because you don't determine what that bottle sells for. Your customers determine what they will pay for that bottle. And so your product, either you have to make a lot of it and sell it at a reasonable price, or you make less of it. And of course, if it's worth more, you can charge more. So it's really, you know, the kind of thing you can't start with. But, you know, if you make a better product, you know, just like Toyota, they came out with the Lexus brand. And for us, you know, we've got older vines and they're producing less fruit, but it's a more complex fruit. And so we've come out with some of our reserve type labels that we charge a little bit more for, because they're more unique, they're special, and they're in smaller quantities.
Are you able to lay any of these down? And have you, with considering how long you've been in the business, and what's your reaction been to them when you crack them open?
I'd like to let my wife do a little bit more talking, and I'll let her explain the last event that we had right here at this location with Chef Pete.
We did do, we had an appreciation dinner, and we had a lot of our good customers, about 50 of them, and we had a dinner, and Pete Dressen, who's a chef, a very good chef from the Aurora Inn in Aurora, Ohio, came out and did a very nice dinner for us, and we did go through the years of Pinot Noir that we've made. And we, Art does lay them down, and we did bring them out. And the years that were good really, really stuck out. We had a fabulous 2002, 2005, and 2007. And people were just awed that, you know, we like play a game with them. We don't show them the year. And then they come up with which one they felt was the most fantastic after all those years. So we've done that numerous times.
We do what we call a vertical tasting for special events, and we'll go back through the years. And, you know, it's very interesting because wine is really a story, and it's a story about the place. It's a story about the weather, the environment that the grapes had that year, and a story about the people that worked on those grapes. And you can just see the variations. And it wasn't all due to temperatures, you know, and weather. A lot of it was due to events that were out of your control.
And I got to imagine you're reliving that history at each sip, pretty much.
You're reliving every vintage with each sip. And certainly it's very interesting to go back and look at years that, and Doreen mentioned some very stellar years, 02, 04, 05. 98 was a great, great year, and they're still great wines. But even the interesting thing about Pinot, and the interesting thing about if you grow grapes, take better care, the one thing that's different about what we can do and other vineyards can do is we can make accommodations. If you're waiting for the truck to pull up from Sonoma or from some California valley, those grapes were picked, some maybe mechanically, and the truck shows up and they get off, and you got what you get, and you get what you got. If we have a less than stellar year, and I'll use 2011 as an example because it was a cooler year and a wetter year, a little more cloud, but we accommodated. We did some things differently. We opened up the canopy more than we usually do. And we actually let the grapes hang another 2 weeks longer. So that instead of starting harvesting in mid-September, we didn't start until almost the first week in October. And by then, the sun had come out, the rain had kind of disappeared. We got some beautiful, dry fall days, and the grapes ripened. And I think they produced, because we can accommodate things and because we can control the grape growing environment more, we're more consistent with producing quality wines. And certainly I don't remember a bad year for our Riesling. I really haven't. Don't remember one.
No, our Riesling is pretty consistent year to year. That's probably our biggest seller in the white varietal. We make some dry and some sweet, but you find even people who like their dry wines, they always end up, they like their Rieslings, because Rieslings just have that flavor to them. They have that, ours has probably got a little more citrus to it, and it's just a really nice wine, no matter what.
I think that Riesling has become much more acceptable by a lot of people who are prefer finer wines, because they're getting to understand it, and it depends on who makes it and how they make it.
Right. I think so, too. And, I mean, even if they like a Chardonnay or something a little bit drier. But the Riesling does make a nice dry. I get a lot of people that like the dry. In fact, we sold out of all of our dry Riesling. We're waiting for it to... we have some in the tanks, but we haven't bottled it yet.
So I'd just like to comment, if I could, on the flavors of the Riesling from this region, which are very different. And I don't just mean ours. All the other vineyards in this area that grow Riesling, if you were to do a flavor profile of the Grand River Valley Rieslings, there would be some very consistent themes versus, let's say, the Finger Lakes. The Finger Lake Rieslings are very good, and but they also have a unique mineral taste to them. And that's not good or bad, right? That's just something that they have that comes from their soil. Our soils, because it has a lot of iron in it, produces a Riesling that has almost tropical flavors. So along with the citrus, instead of having minerals, You get some tropical flavors, some mango, some pineapple, some, you know, more or less tropical fruits. And you'll find that's true for all the Rieslings that are grown in the Grand River Valley. They share that common thread, that common whatever molecules make up the flavors that come from the soil. We all share that. And the same is true for some of our other wines, too. The Valley's pretty famous for growing some very nice Chardonnays. And our Pinot Noir is a little bit different than perhaps some of the Oregon Pinot Noirs, not in terms of some of the aromatics, because Pinot Noir is probably the most aromatic of all the reds. And ours has some very typical characteristics, strawberry, cherry, you know, rhubarb. You can go down the whole list of different adjectives, and yeah, they're all there. But there's something unique about it, that the flavors, again, it comes from the soil. And there's something just a little bit different about our Pinots that are different from Oregon, different from California, and much more in tune and in line with the true Burgundian flavors, which again I think go back to the rocky soils that the grapes in Burgundy are grown on.
Plus, this vineyard here, you have, correct me if I'm wrong, but are from the Dijon clones, which are French clones.
Yes, what Doreen is just explaining, the vines that we have here. 30 years ago, 40 years ago, when we first planted our first Pinot Noirs, we got them from California nurseries, and they were by different names and different numbers. And they're still good. Some we still grow today. Some we pulled out. But for example, Pommard was a clone that we were able to get from California nurseries. And today, you know, over the years, people have brought back cuttings from the Côte d'Or, from Burgundy, from the very famous vineyards like Latache and Romani-Conti and Chambertin and Pommard, as I mentioned before. And now you can actually buy vines that are the offspring of cuttings that were brought back from those specific Burgundian vineyards, and they're called Dijon clones because that's Dijon, France. And we have them, number 115, 113, 114, 777, and these are just numbers that the viticulturalists have put on them, but they're all different. They're different in the berry size, they're different in their disease immunity, they're different in how many days it takes to ripen each different clone. Some are very, very small berries, and what that gives us is a very, very concentrated juice to skin ratio, because all the flavors in a grape are all in the, most of them are for reds, are in the skin, like the color. So when you have less juice, less water, you get a much more concentrated wine. And so these Dijon clones are clones that are very, very small berries and produce a much more concentrated, much more characteristic wine, very similar to Burgundy. But of course, our Pinot Noirs are a fraction of the price.
This has been a real pleasure talking to both of you. Again, being a native Ohioan, I've always been proud of the wine that's been grown around here, but I have to say, coming out here, I've always enjoyed my visits here, because you do get the sense that it's all about the wine here, and it's always been a very positive experience, so that's very cool. But before I let you two go, for our listeners who'd like to learn more about St. Joseph and to learn about both Art and Doreen, how can they do that online?
We can go to our website. A lot of information on it with the different types of grapes we grow and everything and what we do here. And if you wanted to go there, you would go on www.saintjosephvineyard.com. And then the other thing is, if anybody ever had any questions, they could more than welcome, or if they're coming into this area, which a lot of people do, they are going to come into the area, they email me, and that's stjosephvineyard@windstream.net. And that's another way. Or they could just call us at 440-298-8000. 3709.
And the best thing is they could come here to visit your tasting room, which is, I think, a really cool little place, and it's right in the middle of the vineyard, which makes it that much more fun.
Yes, that's the best place to come. I mean, if you have a chance and you're out this way, even if you're staying in Cleveland, and we get a lot of people from Columbus and Pittsburgh. We get a lot of visitors in from California, and so just to come out and see what we do here and to taste some of the wines. We welcome them anytime.
We also get a lot of traffic from overseas, people that are on their way to see Niagara Falls that might be driving from Chicago or parts east and or parts west and going east. We get a lot of customers that stop because this is wine country in Ohio.
Art, Doreen, this has been really great talking to you. A total pleasure, and your passion is awesome, I have to say. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ray and Mary.
Thank you, Ray.
Learn more about St. Joseph Vineyards by visiting stjosephvineyard.com.
Thank you for listening to this program. Watch for our next podcast featuring Scott Lloyd, National Sales Manager for Frank Family Vineyards in Napa Valley. Cheers.
Life Between the Vines was produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Original music by Tim Turton. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our web geek is Tim Panicucci. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2012.